Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under,
me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters,
filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
Hi, sports fans. Cabrera Duran here. I'm the editor and production manager for the Pro Sports Podcasters, as well as one of its hosts. And I felt like today's episode deserved a special introduction, because unlike our usual episodes where we cover a number of different sports, I have decided to only include our interview with Louis Aguiar. Now, sometimes things just happen for a reason, and this interview is a perfect example of that. We were supposed to interview Louis the previous week as a lead-up to the Super Bowl, but things happened, and the interview had to be rescheduled to earlier this particular week. Now, most NFL fans will be aware of Coach Marty Schottenheimer's passing, and our condolences go out to his family and his friends. And this information came out shortly before our interview with Louis Aguiar, who had played for Coach Schottenheimer. And the interview that follows is both solemn and uplifting, and I would like to thank Louis Aguiar for participating in what must have been a difficult time for him. And normally, we only include bits and pieces of our interviews in the main podcast, and then offer the entire interview to our Pro Sports Podcasters Patreon followers, but I felt like this episode deserved to be shared with everyone, and I hope you enjoy it.
And I don't know if you guys, heard, my old coach passed away today, Marty Schottenheimer.
We did hear about that, and if it's okay, we're going to maybe get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I just found, I know they've been struggling. They've been struggling with it, with his family, with himself. I woke up and it was on my phone that Marty passed away, and it's hard to grab right now with how much he's done, you know, for myself and a lot of other players. It's just,
yeah. What was he like as a coach?
Oh, he was awesome. He was very. He was a player's coach, because he played. And you know, he was straightforward with you. You know, with some of these coaches beat around the bush, he did it, and that's what I liked about it so much. And I learned a lot from him, and he's gonna be missed. I enjoyed seeing him and talking to him.
What was your favorite memory?
The favorite memory of Coach Marty, probably when he would always cry in our meetings. You know, he would gets all fired up and. He starts crying, and he goes, I still remember this. He goes, yep, Pat's a strong one. Pat's his wife. Because Pat's a strong one. He goes, I cry. I get excited. I cry. He goes, when my kids get married, I'll be the one crying, and she'll be consoling me. that was, to me, I'll always remember that, because it doesn't matter who you are, what you are, what you do for a living, you can show your soft side, and he did that. You know, and that takes a lot to let everybody know that.
Mm-hmm. He showed himself. He showed his heart.
I was going to say, what was one of his favorite go-to plays, if you will, or something that he really enforced on the field?
I know for the offense, anytime we're down in the end zone, he always, his favorite play was called 14 Bob. That means the tailback's getting the ball, or an I formation. The tailback was getting the ball, fullback's blocking, and we're going through the four hole. And he goes, I'll put my best guys against your best guys, and we're going to score every time. Anytime we're inside the five, we ran 14 Bobs until we scored. You know, Marcus got a lot of touchdowns that way. I still remember, you know, I remember that was his go-to play for offense, because I would listen to the offense stuff, because 95 when Montana got injured, I became a third-string quarterback, and then in 97 when Elvis Kerback got injured, I also became a third-string quarterback, so I knew some of the plays. Not many, I knew some.
Sorry, what was it like playing with Joe Montana?
Oh, playing with Joe? He was a legend. I tell this story to everybody. It was my fourth year in the league. 1994, and I was a free agent. I went to Kansas City. I still remember I walked in the locker room, and Joe was there, and I pointed at him. My fingers, my arm was shaking. I said, "You Joe Montana?" He's all, "Yes, yes, I am." I go, "I'm Louis Aguilar." I was like a little kid. I was just like, "Hey, you're Joe Montana." And so it was just because I grew up watching him play at Notre Dame. My mom's a big Notre Dame fan. And then I grew up watching him out in San Francisco. So I grew up 45 minutes east of San Francisco. So I grew up watching him play college and with the Niners and win all the Super Bowls with him. So I was so much in awe when I met him. And I'm just thinking, slap myself in the face. You're in the same locker room as his. He's your teammate now. Just calm down. Take a deep breath. Relax. So that's, I had to learn how to, you know, after that day, I was much better after the first day. But yeah, Joe was just easy going guy. My mom made her homemade salsa and I put it on the table for guys to eat. And Joe goes, "Who made this?" And I'm all, "Oh, my mom did. That's the best stuff. Can I get some?" I'm all, "Sure." So I called my mom. Asked her if I go, "Yeah." I go, "Mom, I got a special request for your salsa. Can you make some and bring it?" And she goes, "Why?" I go, "Well, Joe Montana wants it." And she goes, "I'll make it and bring it to the game this weekend, only if I can give it to him." I said, "Okay, well, let me ask him." I said, so then after I talked to my mom, Joe was in meetings. And I go, "Hey, Joe," I talked to my mom. I go, the only way that you can get some more is if you come up and get it from her in person and meet my mom and dad. He goes, "Sure, not a problem." And so I called my mom. She said, "Not a problem." And that was on a Wednesday. They flew in Friday night, Saturday after practice. After everybody got done with meetings and everything, I took Joe upstairs and introduced Joe to my parents and took pictures. And my mom and dad and their friends were just in awe that Joe took time out to come up and get the salsa. And he spent about half hour, 45 minutes with myself, my parents, and my parents' friends. And that's something that I'll never forget, and my parents will never forget. So that was pretty cool that Joe did that. You know, I knew he was going to be in the Hall of Fame, but for him to, you know, take the time out and do that. And he always stayed after games and signed autographs and stuff. He was just a great, easy going guy. He was just one of the guys. Joe was awesome.
Nice. And when you and Joe played, that was a time when it was power football. It was ground and pound. The running game was strong. Nowadays, it's more of a passing game. Do you think that's a good or a bad thing for football?
It's turning into a 7-on-7 passing league. You know, you look at, you know, all these yards. Everybody's going, "Oh, yeah, they passed for 5,000 yards and this and that." It's a different game now than it was 25 years ago. Just like when I first got in the league, when I first got in the league 25 years before that, a lot of teams mainly ran the ball. They didn't pass. And then when I got there, it was more of a 50-50. And now it's more of like a 70-30. Looks like, you know, everybody's passing the ball. You know, Mahomes is always in shotgun. I don't even know in the Super Bowl if he ever got an under center. They might have down by the goal line, but even then, he's still in shotgun and they run all these different plays. So it's a different league. It's a different time. That's what the fans want to see. They want to see great plays and, you know, they want to see a lot of scoring, and that's what the game has gone to. I mean, same thing in college. That's where, you know, Mahomes was always in shotgun and that's where he's at now.
Right. Now, speaking of Mahomes and everything that happened on the weekend, who do you think is the greatest player of all time currently? Or just ever?
Currently?
Actually? Well, I guess.
Well, I get in a lot of arguments about that. The greatest of all time. You know, if you put Montana and Jerry Rice in today's game with the lack of touching the quarterback and the receivers, I mean, I don't think anybody could touch Joe and Jerry Rice. I grew up watching them play. I don't think anybody could touch him, to be honest with you. But it's a different game today. I mean, you saw Joe sat out, because he got, you know, that late hit by Jim Burt. You know, they don't do stuff like that nowadays. They don't take shots on quarterbacks. Quarterbacks back then, when I played, you know, you throw an interception, the D line are taught to go after the quarterback because they don't want him to make the play. And they, you know, I saw the game earlier where that happened earlier in the season, and they got flagged because it was they went after the quarterback after a pick. And all he becomes a guy on the field. You got to block him. So it's a different game, you know. And I say that, and then guys, you know, when I played college ball with Jim Otto Jr. His dad was Mr. Otto that played for the Raiders, you know. And back then, you know, talking to him, you know, he always thought Johnny U was the greatest quarterback. You know, when I grew up, I think it's Joe Montana. Kids nowadays, they think it's Tom Brady. So it's a different time. So it's hard to say who's, you know, in today's game, the best quarterback right now. Yeah, I think it's, I hate to say it, but it is, I think it's Brady. You know, he has 7 Super Bowls and 7 out of 10. That's 70%. He's been in the Super Bowl 10 times. He's been in the league, what, 20 years? His kids go, oh, yeah, every other year we go to the Super Bowl. Hey, Dad, let's go to the Super Bowl next year. You know, how many kids can say that? Every other year, they're going to Super Bowl.
At Disneyland.
Yeah, we're going to Super Bowl and Disneyland. We get a lot of free trips because of my dad. And he's not even the moneymaker in the family. His wife makes $100 million a year. You know, he's making $25 million a year. That's chump change to the wife. in today's game, I mean, look, everybody thought, you know, I even thought, I mean, I always thought it was, you know, Belichick's team. But you take Brady out of it, they don't make the playoffs, and then he goes down to Tampa and takes them to the Super Bowl and wins. I mean, that's an amazing compliment. I hate to say it. I don't like the guy because he kept beating us when I, you know, because I played for the Jets. I coached for the Jets. He beat us quite a bit. But yeah, he's good. But so it's I always get in arguments with guys nowadays, you know, because you got to look at, okay, what era are we talking about? In this era now, yeah, you know, you got Brady, you got Breeze, who's, you know, thrown for what, 80,000 yards. So you know, back when I was growing up, you know, that they call it Eric Coryell, the San Diego Chargers, when Dan Fouts was throwing the ball, you know. And everybody goes, oh, wow, they throw the ball too much. Nothing compared to nowadays. So, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, to answer your question, to make a longer story even short, I'll say, you know, it's Brady in this time. In my time, I think it's Joe Montana. And before that, it was Johnny U and Broadway Joe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a 49ers fan, Louis, so I don't need any more convincing that it's Joe.
Oh, that's awesome.
Joe's 100%, so I don't need any convincing that it's Joe. But just thinking about Sunday's game, where did it go wrong for Kansas City, in your opinion?
Patrick had a bad toe. They were playing with backup offensive linemen. And, you know, those two things, with the pass rush that Shu had and the other guys on the defense, I mean, they tore the offensive lineman a new one with the Chiefs. You know, it shows when you have your backups in. You know, Wisniewski's always been a, you know, he's older. He's, you know, he started at one time with the Raiders, and now, you know, he's late in his career. He's more of a backup. You know, he doesn't have the quick feet, but, you know, it's just not having your, as Tiger Woods would say, you know, he didn't have his A game because, you know, having two out of the 5-year starting linemen out, and with a bad toe, you saw him running for his life, and he couldn't really run with his bad toe, but he was still on the run, throwing the ball, throwing dimes, and, you know, they dropped some balls. And but yeah, where it started with, you know, it was just having a makeshift offensive lineman. I know when I played, the years that we went 13-3 with the Chiefs, I mean, we had no injuries. And the years that we had injuries, my first year with Montana, my only year with Montana, we go 9-7, or no, 9-7, you know, or 7-9. I can't remember. We didn't make the playoffs. You know, had a lot of injuries. Again in 96, you know, we had injuries. So, I mean, it's, I mean, do they have a good game plan? Yeah. But could they fulfill it? No, because just having, you know, having the linemen, but the linemen helped, you know, didn't help out much. But Todd Bowles with that defense that he had, you know, that was the first time I saw anybody, any team go two safeties high. You know, they were 20, 25 yards off the ball because they were not going to get beat deep by the Chiefs players, you know, with Hill and McCole Hardeman and Sammy. Those guys have speed. And you could probably put those guys together, those four guys and the four receivers for the Chiefs, you can probably put them in. They could probably be a 4x100 team and go to the Olympics. They're that fast. But Todd Bowles, I mean, he had a great, great, great defensive scheme, and it worked out perfect because they weren't getting very deep, and they did before. So that's what I saw, is watching the game. You know, having your lineman injured, he couldn't. He still ran. Well, I saw. I didn't know they even kept stats like this. He ran for 432 yards before he threw, in all the scrambles.
Right.
That's a lot of yards. That's a lot of yards. I mean, I never thought about that. You know, I have always seen him scramble, but yeah, he ran 432 yards for his life. And he was still throwing that one, the one pass where he's, parallel to the ground. And he still hit the running back in the hands, went through his hands and him in the face mask, and he dropped the ball. I mean, Mahomes he's unbelievable. You know, he really, the things I've seen him do is just like throwing the ball and doing, it's just unbelievable. He's going to be, when Brady finally leaves and Breeze leaves, you know, there's no stopping Mahomes if they can keep that team together.
Perfect. All right. Now, you had briefly touched on the Jets. Right now, the offseason is a great time to always prepare and kind of see what worked, what didn't, review the plays and what have you. What do you see the Jets doing this offseason?
Hopefully better than what they have done the last couple of years. when I played there, J-E-T-S stood for just in the season. They're going to hate me for that. Especially now with Adam Gase was there. Yeah, that really stood for just in the season. I mean, they have can Darnell get the job done? I think he can, but it's going to take a lot because they have a lot of first round draft picks. They just got to put it all together. They got some great players. They just got to put everything together, and you know, they're going to have to look at and, the schemes that they put together for the offense when Adam was there wasn't very good, I felt like. So, but now, you know, with the new head coach who's a defensive-minded guy, hopefully, you know, they bring in a good, you know, they have, you know, had a good offense coordinator, let him do what they do best. And hopefully they can turn everything around because this offseason for the Jets is going to be a big one because, you know, they're picking second and so I think they have two first-round draft picks, I think, this year. They have their pick, and I think they got one from somebody else. I think they get it from Seattle Seahawks. They have one later on. So, you know, they can use those two draft picks. They need to put some weapons around him. And, I mean, do you go out and get receivers to help him out, or do you go out and get offensive linemen to protect his ass? You know, which one are you going to do? Because they need both. You know, so if they can try and – you know, maybe pick up a lineman through free agency. But usually if you have good offense linemen, those teams are going to tender them or give them a lot of money. They're not going anywhere. So they're going to have to find one in the draft. So that's going to be a big part of what they're going to have to figure out what they want to do this year.
Right. It does help that the Jets have some cap space. Like, I know Trent Williams is coming up from the 49ers, and there's a gentleman from Baltimore Ravens who wants to specifically play left tackle, so they could throw some money at those guys. But
correct.
Let's say this, Louis. Let's say someone offers to trade for Sam Darnold. If you're in the Jets, would you make that trade, or would you hold on to him and try and build around him instead?
You got to see what you can get in the draft. I mean, if they could trade him and, you know, get another first-round draft pick for this year and next year, you know, trade him and you know, then what do you do? Because if Trevor Lawrence goes first, you're gonna take the kid from BYU that can run and scramble, or you take the quarterback from Alabama who's a proven winner. So there's a lot of those are gonna be a couple of things that they're gonna have to think about. You know, do you go after the proven winner with I can't think of off the top of the head a kid from Alabama? Do you take him? You know, because they're showing him, you know, going down the middle of the draft somewhere, middle to the end of the first round, but he's a proven winner. But you know, so those are gonna be a lot of things that you know the offense coordinators, you know, is going to be a big pick on what he's going to do because, you know, for the next 3 years, this is the guy that they're going to, you know, offense coordinator is going to get a 2 to 3 year deal coming in, and he better pick the right quarterback to turn that system around. You know, if they get rid of Darnell, can the kid from BYU or the kid to Alabama, can they then what Darnell did? I still think Darnell's a great quarterback. I really do. He just hasn't had anything to go to him. You know, it's like, you know, talking to some people that coach in the league that I've talked to, you know, even if they, you know, if they had the first pick, even if they got Trevor Lawrence, they don't have anybody for him to get the ball to really. So you're going to get a great quarterback, but have no supporting cast. You know, they got to get, you know, if they're going to get rid of Darnell, they better get somebody, they're going to need to get a supporting cast for whoever they get. And that's what they're going to need. You know, Gore's talking about retirement. You know, they're going to need, you know, running back. They're going to need a couple of receivers to get that offense going. I don't know if I answered your question or not. But would you, I mean, if you trade Donnell, is the kid from BYU or the kid from Alabama better than Donnell? I don't know. I've only seen the kid from BYU play once. And that was in the bowl game. So to me, you know, yeah, you know, he did well. But how many times have we seen these college quarterbacks have all these great yards in college and they come out in the NFL and they can't get the job done? It's happened quite often. Do you think about that or do you, you know, they got to think about that too? Or can they say that Donnell, who's already been there, he's already taken his whippings as a you know as a rookie first year quarterback second year quarterback, and if you get some guys around him, I think the kid can get the job done. So if they do trade him, they're going to have to get somebody that they think that they can build a future with, and they're not going to get. Are they going to get Trevor Lawrence? They'd have to give to jump up one spot. They're going to have to give Jacksonville a lot. They're going to have to give him a lot just to get that one spot to get him.
So your illustrious career as being a punter, I know you talked a lot there, but I'm also just genuinely curious of your perspective on this. Who is the best punter in the league currently?
The best punter currently. It's either going to be Kearns down in Tennessee or, I'm losing my mind. The kid in Baltimore, Coke.
What's his last name? Sam Coke. Yeah, Sam Coke.
Yeah, Sam. Those guys, well, yeah, God. Then you got Johnny Hecker.
Yeah, you got Johnny Hecker in L.A.
You got Johnny Hecker, too. I want to go with Johnny. Yeah, I think he used to play here at the Rams. I used to see his games here. Those other two guys I've seen, they hit the ball well, but when – Johnny just sets back and, you know, and I've seen him hit some, you know, I coached and I played and I still time his punts and I still time everybody's punts during the games when I'm sitting here at home. And, you know, when Johnny, I saw him hit one couple years ago, hit like a 5.6 or a 5.7. I'm like the stopwatch and I'm all, that can't be right. So I deleted it. I rewound my TV. You know, I got the DVR. I rewind it, played it again. I hit it again. I'm, holy crap. I go, the biggest ball I hit was a 5.54, and his was like a 5.7 or 5.8. I'm just going, holy wow. And he can line up one. He can line up, aim it to your right, his right. The return goes to his left, and then he drops the ball inside, and he pulls it to the left. And you can tell that he does that intentionally because when he does that, I call them flyers. Some coaches call them gunners, the outside guys. If you're punting the ball to the right, they usually take a release to the right because that's where the ball is going. And if they're going, the ball's going on the left, they take the release. So the guy on the left side will take an outside release, and the flyer on the right side will take an inside release if the ball is going to the left. And I saw him aiming to the right, drops a ball, pulls it to the left, hits a 5-2 outside the numbers, and I see those two guys release to the left. I'm all, damn, I could never do that. Hecker, he can do amazing things with that ball. He's unbelievable. And then he has a leg to hang it up. Yeah, he's good. Johnny Hecker, I think he's probably the top punter out there right now. And the top kicker, hands down, I think it's Tucker there in Baltimore. That kid is phenomenal.
Now, Louis, you played for Kansas City. You also played and coached in New York with the Jets. But which team do you root for nowadays? What jersey are you wearing on a Sunday afternoon?
I wear all four of them. if they're not playing each other, I still root for the Jets. Because they're the first team that gave me a shot to play in it. I mean, they're not the Buffalo. I even cheer for the Buffalo Bills because when I came out of college, Marv Levy and Bruce DeHaven has now since passed, gave me my, they brought me to training camp in 89 and 90. And then 91, I went to in 91. I went and tried out for the Barcelona Dragon. I tried out for the NFL Europe. And when I got drafted, Coach Bicknell comes up to me after they drafted me. I was the first punter drafted into World League American Football. Now it's back then. That's when they started it, WLAF, and then they changed it to NFL Europe. Coach Bicknell came up to me after they drafted me, and he goes, "The reason why I drafted you first," he goes, Marv Levy and Bruce DeHaven spoke so highly of you. That's the reason why I drafted you first. And I can't thank Bruce and Marv enough for that. And then when I was first punter drafted out of 20 punters, I went to the Jets. And then the first time I played against the Bills, I went up to Marv and I thanked him. And I thanked Bruce DeHaven tremendously. I thanked them both because they saw something in me in those two training camps to tell Coach Bicknell that, hey, this kid has what it takes to play in the NFL, and that's why they drafted me first. So I can't thank Marv and Bruce enough because if it wasn't for them, I never would have made it because if I would have went to other teams, they may not have told Coach Bicknell that much about me. But they, hands down, helped me out tremendously. And then, Barcelona, then I went to the Jets. I played there for 3 years. Then I went to Kansas City for 5, one in Green Bay, one for Chicago. So I root for all four teams. It was a playoff weekend this year when the semis, because you had the Buffalo playing Kansas City, and then you had Tampa playing Green Bay. So three of the four teams I was with at one point or another. So, I mean, I was pulling for Green Bay to beat Tampa. So I played there with Favre. And then I was pulling a little more for Kansas City because I played there 5 years over Buffalo. But it would have been, good either way because, I have a lot of history with the Bills also. But I was pulling a little more for the Chiefs. To answer your question, the team I cheer for first is the Chiefs, and then it goes from Chiefs, then it goes to the Jets, then it goes to it's a toss up between the because I played 1 year each with Green Bay and Chicago, but I still go back and I do a lot of stuff with the Kansas City Chiefs. I live outside St. Louis on the Illinois side. And so I'm part of a group called the Kansas City Chiefs Ambassadors. And what we do, we're all former players for the Chiefs, and we do charity events where we raise money, and all the money we make goes to charities. We have a 501(c), and I've been with them. I've been doing the Kansas City Chiefs Ambassador stuff since I think I moved out here in 02. I went to go do it in, I think in like 05 or 06. I did my internship, and then I got voted in. And so I still go back and do a lot of charity stuff with the Kansas City Chiefs and sign autographs for kids. And on game day, they're always asking for us ambassadors to go to do swizzits and stuff. And so I still give back to the community there in Kansas City. So, and I had a charity there when I played, the High Five Foundation. So Kansas City is very near and dear to my heart. And so They're my go-to team when I have to vote for any, cheer for anybody.
Should Green Bay move on from Rodgers like they did with Favre?
Well, Favre said he retired. There's a difference.
Oh.
Favre said he retired, and so that's why they moved on to Rodgers. And then Brett says, I'm coming out of retirement. And Mike McCarthy already said who the starting quarterback was. It was going to be Rodgers. And that took and when Favre came out of retirement, and I know Mike McCarthy, he was with me for Kansas City for 5 years. And when Favre came back and said he was going to play, that took some big-ass balls by McCarthy to say, okay, Brett, you're the backup. For everything that Brett Favre's done for the Green Bay Packers, tell him that he's not starting. You said you're retired, so I moved on. And should they move on from Aaron Rodgers? He's still playing great ball. And the kid who they drafted went to Utah State. I went to Utah State. I was happy as hell that Jordan Love got drafted in the first round by the Green Bay Packers. I'm like, holy crap, somebody from Utah State, first round draft in the first round. Sweet. I was all excited because I went there. I'm getting a little excited. But should they go on from him? No, he didn't say he's going to retire. He still wants to play. So that's the difference. Favre said he retired. And I love Favre to death. But, you know, when you say retire, he left and then he decided to come back. McCarthy stood by what he believed in. And they did really well. Aaron Rodgers did a great job. Should they go on from him? No. You know, you saw what Mahomes did sitting on the bench. And you see some of these guys that are quarterbacks are drafted and they get thrown right into it. And how many of those quarterbacks don't make it? A lot of them don't, because they get thrown to the wolves right away. I mean, there's a handful of them that have made it. You know, you look at Peyton Manning, he made it. You look at Ryan Leaf, the guy that got drafted behind him, he did make it. You know, you look at Tim Tebow, did he make it? No, everybody thought he was a gimmick guy, but all he knew how to do was win. You know, who cares? He completed 2 of 8 passes, but he won a playoff game. You know, did they give him enough chance? No. Then you look at somebody like Troy Aikman. He got thrown to the wolves. And, no, he goes 1-15 his first year. Then after that, what they do? They go to the 3 Super Bowls with him? And then, you know, you look at the draft class of 83, all those quarterbacks who got drafted in the first round. Who, you know, Todd Blackledge played for the Chiefs. Did he do well? No. But did Dan Marino and Kenny O'Brien and the other guys, did they all do well? Yeah. So should they move on from Aaron? No. I think they should stick with him. That's long story short again. Yes, I think they should stick with him.
Love it.
I'm sorry, guys. This is going to be a 5-hour interview.
That's good. So before we get you out of here, we do have a little game that we want to play.
Oh, you guys already getting rid of me? Dang, it's only been 45 minutes. Hey, I'll go on anytime with you guys. Anytime you need somebody. I got to try. How do you?
We'd love to have you back.
I'd love to be back. I enjoy this stuff.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay, what's the game we're going to play?
All right, so this game is 3 questions, and it's basically called Do You Know Yourself? Okay.
Okay.
So we took stats from your career, put them in a questionnaire. Shoot. Multiple choice. I'm sure you can. I'm sure you can do this.
Okay.
You ready for this?
Yes, sir.
Question number 1. According to NFL.com, how many punts did you have in your career? Is it A, 758, B, 905, or C, 867?
A, because I know that. I'm pretty sure that's the answer is A, 700 something, because it was my 8th year in the league and I had my first punt blocked and I had 585 punts. On my 585 punt, I had my first punt blocked in my career against Pittsburgh on a Monday night. So I played another 2 years. So I'd say 700 something, 780, what did you say, 784?
758.
So I say 758.
And that is correct.
Yes. I got it right.
Exactly.
See, I have to go back and play, go through the plays and figure, okay, what do I know 585 was my eighth year in the league. So, yes, I figured that one out. Okay, what's the next question?
All right, next question. This one might be a little more tricky, but I think you got this. How many punting yards did you have in total? So was it A, above 27,000, B, above 26,000, or C, above 25,000?
Oh. I say 20. Did you say 26?
Yes.
I say above 26,000. So I figure 700 and some punts at 40, and I average 40 yards, 41.2 yards a punt. So 7 times 4 is, so I was saying 42. I was thinking it was like 40,000 yards, but okay, go ahead.
Exactly. It was 26. The specific number is 26,802.
So I was pretty close.
Damn, you're good at this. I got to start asking you tougher questions. All right. Let's see.
I do the math.
All right, let's see if you can do this one. This one's a toughie. Question number 3. And last question, by the way. So you've already won the game, just letting you know.
Okay. What's my price? Do I want a new Corvette?
100%. New Corvette.
100%. Exactly. I want a new Corvette today. Woohoo! My girlfriend's looking at me and rolling her eyes.
According to NFL.com, what was your punting average in yardage? Is it A, 39.9, B, 40.3, or C, 41.2?
41.2. I already gave you that answer.
Exactly.
41.2 has a career.
Smashed it.
Oh, man, got it off. 100%.
If you would ask me how many punts inside the 20, I would not have gotten that answer. I would not know. I'd say about 22 inside the 20 over my career, 10 years. So it'd be about 220 punts approximately inside the 20. I don't know how many I have. I really don't know that answer, but I know the 41.2 because I get letters from fans at least 2 to 3 days, 3 times a week. Ask them to send my playing cards, and they say, "Oh yeah, you had a great career. You averaged 41.2 yards for a career." So I always, every letter I get from these fans, I actually sit and read them, and a lot of them I've saved because I put them in a book, and I save almost all the letters that people send me, and when they ask me to sign my playing card, my playing cards are bubble gum cards, still to this day. I've been on the league 20 years, and still to this day, I get 2, 3, 4 times a week. I get fans sending me my playing cards to sign and send them back to them. And they always write, "Oh, I love watching you play this and that." And that 41.2 is always usually in there somewhere that, you know, this is your career stat. And so, yeah, that's the reason why I knew that one.
That was actually very interesting. So then I was going to say, this is kind of something that kind of came to our mind. What do you think of the return of Alex Smith?
That gives me goosebumps.
Ooh, love to hear
because
that.
Because he was out of the league for 2 years. I remember watching Joe Theismann get his leg broken. He never came back. I know Joe. I got to know Joe. And he never came back after Lawrence Taylor broke, you know, his leg. And watching and seeing Alex Smith come back after, I saw the interview the other day. It was like he said, 726 days he's been out of football, been out, and he finally got to come back and play. And he went through I think he said 17 operations. And for somebody to come back, I call them kids because I'm 54. Most kids that something like that happened, they're going to retire and say, I'm going to retire and I'm gonna take the money and I'm running. But he loves the game so much that. He went through the rehab. He did all the surgeries, and he wanted to come back and play. And he got the comeback player of the year. I think they should damn near name that after him now because I've never seen anybody go through something like that. I had testicular cancer back in 1998, and when I found out I had, did I ever think I was ever going to play again? No, I didn't, because I didn't know how far along my cancer was. I didn't know if I was going to live. I didn't know if I was going to, if I was going to be alive. I didn't know if I was going to die. I had no idea. And luckily we caught it early enough and I'm still here today. And my son now, my my ex-wife at the time was pregnant with my son. My son's now 22 years old. He's married. And so seeing Alex Smith come back for that, and I watched him play for the Kansas City Chiefs. I never got to meet him, but I saw him play there and then go to Washington. When they showed that on TV, I actually cried when I saw that, because it was just a big moment, because I knew what he went through and going through my cancer, and I got to come back and play, and he broke a leg and he got to come back. I mean, it was, they never thought he was going to play again. And he came back and played, and he's playing at a high level. He can still do it. He can still play the game. And so that, to me, gets, anytime I see that on TV since he came back, I get goosebumps, because it's incredible on what he did.
No doubt about it. We appreciate you sharing that. Now, you can find Louis on Instagram at Laggie10, LAGGIE10. Louis, we really appreciate your time today. It's a pleasure to have you on the Pro Sports Podcasters. Hopefully we can have you back. It's been a great chat.
Thank you so very much for reaching out to me and finding me out there. Anytime you guys need somebody, let me know. I'll be more than glad to come on in and talk with you guys. I thoroughly enjoy doing this stuff. When I was with the Chiefs, I actually had I did a morning show with Randy Miller in Kansas City on the country radio station every Tuesday from 7 to 8, and I thoroughly loved that. I really enjoy doing this stuff, and thank you so very much. I want to thank you guys for taking the time out and inviting me to come on and be a part of your show. It means a lot to me that you guys still like to talk to the older players and get our thoughts, and you found me. I mean, you guys reached out to me, so that means the even more of the world that you guys found me and you came to me. And I really, really, from the bottom of my heart, really greatly appreciate you guys finding me. And I thank you guys for taking the time to spend an hour to do this. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much for being on.
No worries. And we appreciate you coming on.